You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm. Very excited to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and welcome in Tony Franklin, the offensive coordinator at Middle Tennessee State, who was the offensive coordinator for Jared Goff during his Cal career. Coach, thanks for being with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Coach, what do you say to people, because we try to defend it, but who better to talk about this than you, to people who would say that Jared Goff is not ready to play in the NFL because he ran, quote, a simple offense and had no responsibilities at Cal? What would you say to those people?
Well, I would say that they're ignorant. They don't have any idea what they're talking about. Anybody that knows the inner workings of our offense knows that what we try to do is you try to make anything that's complicated simple to learn. That's what a good teacher does. So we try to make our concepts simple, and we try to make our teaching progression simple and all that. But the reality of it is that we put more on Jared Goff than on probably any quarterback in college football, and probably more on him than most quarterbacks in the NFL do. We're a drop-back progression read offense. The thing that scouts like about him is the fact that he's not been a simple, one-read throw guy. He's a guy that the thing that impressed people is that he gets just fourth and fifth reads in 2.8 seconds, and he understands pre-snap coverages. I think a lot of times that people want to label something a system, which is fine because the objective is to score points. If you're an offensive coach, you're supposed to try to score points. And sometimes I get tickled at NFL people who say, well, yeah, their system, all they do is, you know, score a bunch of points. Well, that's kind of what you're supposed to do if you're coaching offensive football, is to score points. So I don't, even though they're trying to make it a negative connotation, you know, what we try to do is we try to take things that could be complex and we try to make them simple in a teaching manner. But what Jared ended up doing was taking it to another level, and the fact that I was able to put more on him than on any quarterback that I've coached. I've had numerous really good football players that have been players of the year in their league and conferences, and had a quarterback before I came to Cal at Louisiana Tech that threw 444 balls in a row without throwing an interception. Cleveland fans would remember Jordan Cameron, and his brother Colby was my quarterback at Louisiana Tech. And So I've seen a lot of good football players and a lot of good quarterbacks, and Jared is a guy that understands the game. He loves the game. He works really hard at it. And then wherever he goes, he'll learn what it is that they want him to learn. Again, I think that the NFL tried to sometimes play it as if they're curing cancer instead of trying to make it a game of football. And I think a lot of us that coach college football get tired of listening to that, because I watch a lot of NFL film.
Sure.
I try to learn from watching NFL film. And, to me, it's a lot simpler to look at NFL defenses than it is at college defenses. You see basically the same thing every week.
Coach, as you've spent time with Jared Goff throughout college, and now he's, of course, declared himself for the draft, most likely probably going to be one of the top two quarterbacks taken throughout the combine, throughout his pro day, what has impressed you most about Jared Goff's ability to continue to get better, so much so that he is in that conversation to potentially be selected number one overall?
Well, I think the biggest thing is what you just said, is that he wants to get better. We do very simple fundamental drills and did them from the day that he arrived until the day that he left. And if you watched him before we played in the bowl game, if you watched him do our Peyton Manning typewriter feet drill, where we work really hard on finding throwing lanes and keeping the ball up high and going through read progression, when we did that drill, he worked at that drill harder on that day than he worked at it the first day that he showed up. And it wasn't that he didn't work at it when he first showed up. It's just that every single day his attitude was, what can I do today to get better at my skill set? He's a professional in his work ethic, and he's a professional in his attitude of how he understands what it is to be a leader. And I think that's what anybody, that if you're going to bet a lot of money on trying to make somebody the face of your franchise, you want somebody that understands leadership, has obviously the physical talent to be able to do it, but is not afraid to go out and to compete and not afraid to make mistakes, because nobody's perfect that's ever played the game.
How would you describe his leadership style?
Well, I love his leadership style, because to me, you can't be a leader until you're a player. You know, there's you can walk in and say, well, okay, he's your starting quarterback, so he's now your leader. And that's one of the biggest misnomers in sports, is that your quarterback has to be the leader of your football team. Some quarterbacks don't need to lead. Some quarterbacks, as you all have seen in Cleveland, are the last thing in the world you'd want them to be, is to be the leader of your football team.
Correct.
You know, you want somebody that can be a good football player, and if they can lead and they have the ability because they are a good player, then they then take over a football team. You don't take it over beforehand. So his style, when he was a true freshman and he weighed about 179 pounds, was to go out and to compete and to be a really good, a great competitor, to try to win football games on a really bad football team, and basically to only speak when he needed to speak. The second year that he was there, his sophomore season, when he was voted captain, he knew then that it was time for him to become more vocal and to take over some of the vocal leadership skills that somebody should have. And then the third year that he was there, when he was captain again for us, he owned that football team. He organized every event in the summer. He organized offensive, defensive, how we did 7-on-7. You know, he called all the plays. He told everybody what to do, how to do it, when to show up. And that was his football team, but he had earned that right. It wasn't something that he went in and just said, I'm going to do this from day one. And he told an interesting story about Peyton Manning at the Manning Camp, where Manning talked about that when he went to Denver, he didn't walk in, you know, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL, he didn't walk in telling people what to do. He walked in and said, you know, I got to earn this job. I got to earn the respect of these people. And then when I do, then I can talk. Until that time, the best thing you can do is to try to keep your mouth shut.
Coach, another question for me is, you know, as you were kind of bringing him along throughout his college career, was there any player in particular, either in college or professional, that you guys study? You've mentioned Peyton Manning. Was there someone? Was it him, or was it someone besides him? That's actually the first part of my question. Second question is, as you look at the professional game, you said you study offenses, you study quarterbacks. Who do you think Jared Goff projects closest to that's currently playing in the National Football League?
Well, we started studying Manning from the day that Jared showed up, because that's how I teach quarterbacks. I try to mimic who Peyton Manning is, and I try to teach everybody, regardless of their skill set when they come in, is I want them to be the footwork that he has. I want them to be somebody that can find throwing lanes and can make plays without having to run, even though I've had quarterbacks that I've taught, you know, that same style to, that rush for 1,200 yards as a quarterback. But I believe that Manning is the most fundamentally sound quarterback in football, and so therefore I try to teach everybody that. And then what you hope then is that they have the improvisational skills to build upon that, and that's the one thing that Jared does a really good job of, is keeping plays alive. I think that he himself, you know, loves the way that Aaron Rodgers can keep a play alive. Aaron Rodgers, you know, has a freak arm, and he's got freak ability to run, and you know, anybody would want to mimic his skills on improvisation. And I know that Jared watched him a lot, and I know that he mimicked him as well. But as far as our skill sets, to what we tried to teach him, was it was in the Peyton Manning playbook of how to work the feet, how to find the one lane, how to keep plays alive. You know, Manning's one of the best in the business of not taking a sack and keeping a play alive. He probably runs about, you know, a 6 flat 40 before he retired. But he was really good at that, and Jared is a good athlete. That surprisingly, I never asked him to run the ball. Probably I may have called 4 designated runs in his entire career that he was there, but he did a really good job of improvisation, of keeping a play alive, and then making a first down when we needed one by scrambling and making a big run for us.
Coach, when you talk about the transformation from the 1-11 team to the 8-5 team, and you go back and you watch his tape from freshman year, and he does get beaten up a lot. And this is, you know, we're in the AFC North here with the Browns, and some people are enamored with Carson Wentz's size, but this is a kid who's 6'4", now up to 215, only 21 years of age, who has displayed what I think is ridiculous physical toughness and mental toughness to hang in the pocket and deliver the throw. Would you say his toughness overall is one of his best attributes?
When you talked about leadership a while ago, the one thing that everybody on a football team respects, whether it's the people on your team or whether or not it's the opponents, is that they respect tough guys. And there's not a tougher football player that I've witnessed in my 36 years of coaching than Jared Goff.
Wow.
He sits in and he never flinches. And he has taken, as you've seen, if you've watched tape, he's taken brutal hits. And we did a lot, you know, as time went on, we did more and more run pass stuff because he has this innate ability to release the football really quick. He's got incredible toughness. And so we eventually began to build from what was simple run pass deals of, you know, little quick outs and bubbles and all that that everybody does, or whether we were throwing seven-step post 25, 30 yards downfield off of a run play, to where that he pulls the ball and the O-line's blocking the run play and he knows he's going to take it right in the mouth and he throws a 30-yard strike on a frozen rope down the field. And the reason I could do that is because he didn't flinch. He is one tough kid. And, you know, he is 6'4", 217, 218 now. I promise you, in 2 years, he'll be 35 years. I mean, he'll be 235 to 40 pounds. He'll look like a different person because he's had dramatic body change in the last, you know, 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
And that will do nothing but continue to go to where that he's full-time nutrition and full-time training and strength, that things that I didn't allow him to do that he'll now be able to do as an NFL quarterback, to where his body becomes basically that's his tool for, you know, being the best that he can be.
Talking with, of course, former Cal offensive coordinator Tony Franklin, who was offensive coordinator for Jared Goff, now at Middle Tennessee State. Coach, with Jared Goff, and you talk about everything he's gone, the toughness, the leadership, et cetera, what is the definitive game in your mind? If somebody, you wanted somebody to go out there and watch a definitive game to understand what Jared Goff can do as a quarterback, was there one, or maybe it's a particular play that come to your mind?
Well, I love the Texas game because it was a game that, it was a really big game for our program just from the simple fact that we were trying to build, we were trying to get over the hump, finally get to a bowl game, come back from being one of the worst teams in college football to trying to be a competitive team in the Pac-12 that we could beat a good football program. And going to Texas, there was a time during that ball game where it looked like they were going to blow us out, then we came back and it looked like we were going to blow them out, then all of a sudden they came back. And there was a play during that ball game where that we got a really good rhythm and good momentum going. We're driving down the field, and Texas is running a player off late because they're going to have too many people on the field. And the player falls down and mysteriously has an injury to where the official stopped the clock, obviously. And Jared turned into a monster. He was livid. He was after the officials. He was after the Texas bench, after the Texas players. And I thought to myself, all right, this kid is a full-grown man now. And our team really bounced off of his energy. And later in that game, I made a really bad play call. We ran a naked bootleg. We were running the ball really well. And we ended up, I made a bad play call, and it was a naked boot. And so he gets out of the pocket, and the guy doesn't buy it, and he sticks in the sack, and he gets rid of the ball, and he rolls him up, and it ends up being a high ankle sprain that carries on for the next 4 weeks. And nobody knew. He couldn't practice. Hardly. He did. He could barely move, but he refused to miss drills. He refused to miss any part of practice, and he went out and hobbled himself around for the next 4 weeks. And the people that watched the games would have never known that he was hurt because his toughness came through, and he finished that game. And I actually asked him in the fourth quarter, you know, he punted the ball about 10 times in his career at Cal, and there were all situations that were that, you know, we would – basically be in a situation where the defense had to respect the fact that he was still in the game. He knocked out, I think, 3 punts inside the 5-yard line. And at the end of that game, with a really high ankle sprain, I asked him to punt one more time. And on the sideline, I asked him, I said, you know, hey, man, I said, can you do this? And he goes, Coach, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. So that was a really memorable experience. And I think at the end of that ball game, Texas missed the extra point, and we went 45-44. And I strongly believe in what I call the football gods. And I think the football gods said, you know what, this kid's going to have that much toughness and grit. He deserves to win this after what he's been through.
Wow. I you know, after talking to you, it's easy to see on tape. It's easy to see the beautiful throws and his ability to move in the pocket and the way that he goes through his progressions and reads all levels and all sides of the field. But to get those behind-the-scenes stories about just his actual toughness, because that's what you're going to need to be a quarterback in the National Football League. What is the one thing that you would say he's got to develop to be the kind of quarterback that he would want to be in the NFL?
Well, I think success in the NFL depends upon a couple of factors. I think, you know, first of all, obviously, is you have to have the physical talent, which he obviously does. And then the second thing that I think is just as crucial as that is you got to get lucky as to where you go. You got to go somewhere to where that they actually, you know, have a clue about what they're doing. And if you look at the NFL, is that there are certain franchises that no matter who ends up there, no matter who ends up as part of that franchise, is that they're successful. And then you have others to where it doesn't matter who shows up, they're not successful. So I think that the biggest thing for him is getting to a franchise that knows how to put together a winning program. And, you know, there's some franchises which obviously do and some that don't. I'm hoping that Cleveland now does with the changes that they've had in ownership and then all and also the changes in coaching to where that now maybe that they're on the right roll. But I think that his success will be determined by the fact that like all the quarterbacks that have gone into the NFL is hopefully getting fortunate enough that they hit that guy to where that, you know, we're at the franchise to where that we're going to be able to put the things around you to be successful. He'd be the greatest quarterback in the history of the world, and if all the other pieces aren't there, it's not going to matter.
You're right, and that's, you know what, some of the big deliberation we've of course have here in Cleveland after 3-13 season and not really being able to lock in on a franchise quarterback. When a guy like Jared Goff comes around, you want to grab him, and that same scenario kind of happened to Cleveland this offseason when we were able to grab Hugh Jackson, and you talked about places Jared could land. Would linking up with a coach like Hugh Jackson, you know, working with quarterbacks and being an offensive guru in his last few years there in Cincinnati, be just a positive thing for him to lock arms with Jared for the first 3 to 5 years of his career here in Cleveland, potentially Cleveland?
Well, I would think that it would. I mean, and again, I think as coaches in the NFL have proven is that sometimes you can have a great coach in a franchise that's not willing to win or doesn't know how, and it doesn't make any difference. That coach goes somewhere else and ends up being, you know, one of the greatest coaches of all time. And, you know, other guys, just very simply, it's impossible to do it there. So I'm hoping that that's the case because I've been a Cleveland fan from a long time ago when I was a kid. And then, obviously, I coached at the University of Kentucky, and
Tim Couch
went to Cleveland, and Tim was one of those guys that I still believe to this day that if Tim had had the right franchise, if he'd been in the right setting, is that he would have been a good NFL quarterback before his arm went dead. You know, his arm, obviously, at the end wasn't alive at all, but he was a tough guy that loved the game and was passionate about it. And I think if you look back in history, you know, Tim was probably one of the most successful quarterbacks there in Cleveland history, just from the fact, I guess that was the last time they went to the playoffs. But anyway, there's so many factors that go into it, and hopefully with Hugh there now, is that they're going to make the turnaround. But you know, the NFL is so much different than college in the fact that you can have a great coach, but it doesn't matter if the personnel and the financial and the cap issues and all that stuff don't work out. It doesn't really make any difference. You got to get good players.
Coach, when it was third and medium, third and long, and a big moment, what was the throw or the play call that you always wanted to give Jared Goff because you knew that was it? Was it that post off the RPO? What was the play call that you always wanted to give him in the big moments?
Well, if we got into, you know, anywhere from third and five or six to third and eight or nine, then what I would want to do is we would call a simple crossing route to where that basically he could get to his fourth progression, which was going to be the curl flat on the backside. He could go through. If we ended up getting cover zero, he had an easy out with a press fade, and we were really good in press fades to where that we could throw back shoulders, and he could throw a back shoulder. If it was fourth and one, he had permission to throw a back shoulder press fade because he was so good at it. But he could go through progression and go from his first read of a skinny post to a 12-yard sail route to the second read, a crossing route on the third read, and then back to the curl flat on the fourth and fifth read. And I knew that, without any doubt, he was going to buy 3 seconds of time to be able to get. If he didn't have a kill shot on the first two, he was either going to hit the crosser or the curl at the three-second mark before he had too much pressure to worry about. You know, he had to make a play. And the other thing was he could improvise from there. But that was the play that I would call.
Coach, this has been great, and I think it's pretty obvious the answer to this last question, but this will be my last one, and we certainly appreciate the time. Would you have any reservations about making Jared Goff the face of your franchise with the first pick or second pick in the case of the Cleveland Browns in this draft?
I think it's the safest pick that anybody in the NFL can make. You don't have you have zero to worry about from a talent standpoint, from a character standpoint, from a toughness standpoint. It's the safest bet that anybody could make is to make him your franchise.
Coach, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate the time and the insights, and enjoy the rest of your day. And hopefully we'll get to talk to you again with Jared Goff as the new quarterback of the Cleveland Browns.
All right, thank you, guys. Take care. Have a good day.
All right, Coach Tony Franklin, bringing it strong. The safest bet anybody could make in the NFL draft would be to take Jared Goff as their quarterback.
Didn't the North Dakota State play-by-play guy say the same thing about Carson Wentz?
I know we had their head coach on. He was up there. Whoever. No, but he said he
whoever it was.
He said that he believed that Carson Wentz could get there, but said he needs time and this, that, whatever. This was a different
time. I'm going to work to get Urban and see if he doesn't think that Ezekiel Elliott should go one and Bosa should go two. And
of course these guys are going to be favorable of their guys. What I thought was interesting, though, because a lot, at least a question from our fan base about Jared Goff, and one of the main reasons that people prefer Wentz to Goff.
Physicality.
And hearing that story about the high ankle sprain, playing 4 weeks, not missing a rep, not allowing himself to do it, not even anybody even knowing, this is a tough kid. This is a very tough kid. Played behind an offensive line that got him killed.
Even furthermore, the one thing that jumped out to me was the go-to play was the back shoulder throw, which NFL quarterbacks don't throw right now because you have to have such a rapport with the receiver that you're throwing it to. You have to understand exactly what coverage that they're in and the technique that corner is playing on your go-to receiver, and then to deliver the ball accurately with velocity on time.
Well, I love it. He basically said his go-to play was outside, both guys running back shoulder fades.
Yeah.
You had a crosser, and then you had the fourth option would be the curl flat on the backside.
Yeah.
So that you could pick up the first down, and he knew he could get through all of those reads. Interesting stuff. Obviously, you know, I'm a big fan, but it's good to hear from somebody who coached him.
No surprise.
But just what a work ethic fiend he is.
Yes.
What a leader he is.
Yes.
And the way that his leadership evolved there, and something that certainly the Browns could need. Don't do it, Rams! Don't do it. I will be back with Sir Andrew Gribble right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. We started off with Peter Schrager, then we had Tony Franklin. Neither one of them, while they both had good information, neither one of them has been knighted like Sir Andrew Gribble, senior staff writer, ClevelandBrowns.com, who joins us next. Gribbs, how are you?
Good. Busy Tuesday.
Busy Tuesday, a lot going on. I don't know if you got to catch any of the Tony Franklin interview with us there. Guy is effusive in his praise and told a few stories about the just toughness and leadership of Jared Goff. And it just makes me think that I don't like the Rams. They're not on my Christmas card list right now.
It's still early. We got a lot of time reports that, you know, like I said, the Sam Farmer of the LA Times.
Give me hope right here. Listen up, folks.
They did their beat writer mock draft.
Yes.
Sam Farmer's a great reporter for that newspaper.
Broke
a lot of stuff with the Rams just simply being there.
Yes.
He goes with Carson Wentz at number one.
And then what happened after that?
I don't know who it was from the Cleveland media, picked Goff at number two.
So you're saying there's a chance.
We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's the only one.
He's the only one right now. But he's in L.A. He's the only one of the people that's in L.A.
Yeah.
So,
and can we agree that there's clearly been a plan from the Rams to leak two different guys to the media at this point? I mean, it's pretty divided still.
Yeah.
And what would be why would it be? What's the bonus in doing that? Because you take who you want to take, and everybody else has got to deal with it.
So we've talked about this too. Like if you leak it If you announce who you're taking, do you lose leverage from potential? Are you kidding me? Trades that you could be offered, like someone just all of a sudden goes nuts and offers you like four first round picks. I mean, that it's a debate on leverage.
But I think it increases your leverage.
Is Wentz or Goff an are you kidding me player though?
I don't know. I obviously like Goff. For those who have just joined the program literally 30 seconds ago. I think you gain leverage. I'm taking Jared Goff. The only chance Jared Goff is going to be a Cleveland Brown or a Philadelphia Eagle, and apparently in San Francisco, that's the one guy Chip Kelly wanted bad, was Jared Goff. If you want Jared Goff, you need to blow my socks off.
Another theory I've heard is, what if the guys are – you announce the name and then the guys are working out or something, suffers an injury, then what happens?
Then you don't take him.
That's, I guess, but
you still haven't taken
about
him?
Putting the message
would
out there.
You take Jared Goff over Jameis Winston?
No.
Okay. What about Mariota?
I like him about the same. I would take him over anybody from the 14 class, and I liked Bridgewater a lot. I would take him over anybody in that class. I think he is basically right about – I think he's Mariota level. Some people have rated him, actually. I know Matt Miller rated him higher than Mariota, but lower than Winston. Winston, to me, is the total package. I would have mortgaged the future for Jameis Winston.
Even Derek Carr, what we know about Derek Carr right now, Pro Bowl quarterback?
Yeah, Derek Carr. Teddy Bridgewater is a Pro Bowl quarterback this year as well. I mean, and I know I love Theodore, but it's not what it once was.
Right.
I think that I like Derek Carr a lot, but I think Derek Carr is more Jay Cutler than he is maybe, you know, I don't think he has the potential to become a Tom Brady.
Interesting.
I think that the way that Goff wins, he could become like that type of a pure pocket passer.
I'm just waiting for whenever the Rams finally do make this pick, or whenever it kind of leaks out that this is officially what they're going to do. I want to know the story behind the story. Why? What convinced them so much that this was the guy and they had to make this move right now?
Watched the tape. I don't know. Maybe they saw what I saw.
I don't know.
Maybe they saw something
still,
more.
It's still, even with a player like that, it's still, even with it, if it was even an Andrew Luck, we'd be talking about how big this trade was.
Of course, it's massive.
It's even not, you don't even know who won the trade.
And we won't for a long time. It could be a win-win. It's only a win-win if whoever they draft turns out to be truly their franchise quarterback. Then the Rams do, you can get a win for the Titans. It's a win. It's just a matter of how much of a win is it, how well do they use those assets.
And maybe with the Rams, they saw what they gave up or what they gained from the RG3 trade, and they're like, well, look where it got us. We're still 8-8.
We're still 8-8.
So well, even though they still did draft some good players with those picks,
they could also look to the mustache as the reason that they are 8-8. But that's neither here, nor there. It is interesting, and a lot of the talk today. Now the Browns trading back, right? So who would they be trading back with? Would you think? And number one, and number two, what are they taking if they trade back in the top 10?
Yeah, that's where I'm almost kind of back to the drawing board with that. If it's, I think that the team that keeps getting thrown out there based on what we're seeing in the media reports and just based on a team's history is the Eagles at that number 8. But I think, as you guys have mentioned, they don't have a number 2. They don't have a second round pick, correct?
Correct.
So that limits what they're able to give up, or it might solidify the fact they might have to give up multiple first round picks to move up from 8 to 2 if they really want to play ball with that. But maybe at 8, we don't even, first off, are we assuming the Eagles would be trading up for a quarterback at that point, or could they be trading up for a position player?
I mean, I've heard they love Ezekiel Elliott, but I would imagine that you don't give up future ones for any position other than a quarterback.
Right. So if would then Ezekiel Elliott be potentially available at number 8 and you take him at that spot? Do you go defense with DeForest Buckner? He would then, based on all the mocks we're seeing, would have to slip to that point.
Quite a bit.
But
yep.
But as we've talked about, this Rams trade has shaken up everything with the mock drafts, not just the top 2 spots, because you're basically we were assuming one at the most in the top 6 was going to be a quarterback. Now you could be 2 really early, so that's bumping everyone back. I mean,
it is.
You could see, based on scheme or fit,
Peter Schrager had Tunsil at 6 to the Ravens.
Right, or even someone like Joey Bosa slipping down to
that number 8 level. And I've seen that in a couple of drafts.
So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of still really good players at that spot, but at number 8 you could go in any direction and truly do the best player available and weigh it that way.
Get us there already. 9 days. At least we're in single digits.
Look how far we've come from this time last week when this trade hadn't even happened yet.
I would like to go back there. I would like to go back and live in that world. That's a great world for me.
I was listening to some podcasts that were older, and they were talking about, there's no way that, you know, the Titans are going to trade out of that spot, or like, so we're just assuming Tunsil and Ramsey. I was like, man, that seems like a year ago. Like, so much has changed, and how the conversations change with the Browns, and then now because the Rams are in that spot and it's long been assumed what they're going to do, it's going with the quarterback. It seems like more national reporters are trying to figure out what the Browns are going to do with that number two pick, even on a higher level. And that's why this is becoming an even bigger story leading into the draft.
It's funny. I almost, and I don't know if this was probably going to piss some people off, I almost would rather, if we were going to trade back, I'd almost rather trade back into the late teens, early 20s, and take the number one receiver on the board, which is where most people think that receiver goes, and get a bigger draft haul. And I think people would be happy if the Browns all of a sudden took Dotson.
But do you need more than? But do you need one more than one partner in that scenario to get that far from two?
The Jets.
The Jets are what? 16?
20.
I mean, what are you giving up for going to 20?
That's 20. That's
my
point.
Lot. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so you'd be getting a lot.
But the Eagles have made the play from the mid-teens to eight, right, mm-hmm. via trade, which puts them in play to go to two or one prior to the Rams trade.
I'd imagine
well.
For the Jets to do that, you'd probably get their one, their two, probably a future one, future two, maybe.
Yeah.
And probably more. Some later
like
round
a fourth
picks,
or,
et cetera.
Fourth and a sixth.
If I'm the Jets, you were like, what, a tiebreaker away from making the playoffs last year?
Yes.
So you're going to go into next year with a rookie quarterback?
I only, again, and for the Jets, just like for the same reason that ultimately I see the Rams not taking Wentz. I don't think, why would they come in and get a guy in Carson Wentz that wouldn't be ready? You've got aging Brandon Martin. That's not the youngest team. That's a win now team.
So that's what I'm wondering.
Matt Forte?
With trade possibilities, would we need to find out who is that quarterback that gets taken number one before you could even pull off any kind of deal at that spot?
Yeah, I would think so. Because what if you coveted Goff all along and you thought the Rams were taking Goff and then you trade the number two pick and then it comes a draft day and they take Wentz and you're like, what?
That's why I said in that 8 minutes on the clock.
They won't make a trade. The Browns will not make a trade. If the Browns do trade down, it will happen in that. Now, they may agree in principle ahead of time. Like, if they take Goff, then we do this. If they take Wentz, then we do this. But I don't think anything happens ahead of time for that very reason. I don't think there's any way anything happens before that. Plus, I think the leverage gets maximized. When somebody's at the gun, it's like, okay, do you want Wentz? Do you really want him? 5 seconds. 4 seconds. Do you really want him? Deal. Done. Like, that's how it's going to go.
It's going to make for some insane. I feel like this draws more people's interest into a draft than when you have the foregone conclusion at the top. Like, that's why.
That's another reason why I don't think the Rams. I think Roger Goodell's like, yo, zip that trap.
I just feel like Thursday's not too far away in the very near future.
Yeah, too bad it's not this Thursday.
And we're going to be doing that draft. You're going to be at the draft party. I'll be here in Berea. I literally go right from TV into here, and I'm going to stand up like I always do when things get intense in a football game, and
yeah,
I get like
pacing.
In front
I
of
pace.
The TV, and I stand up, and I feel like I'm either going to drop to the floor or I'm going to jump through the ceiling.
Well, just from our end, you know, yes. from a writing end last year, when you prepare for a night like the draft night, you try to get as many things written up as possible so you're ready so you can have that news on the website as fast as possible. I felt more comfortable with like the guys I was pegging for the number
last
12
year,
pick
sure.
than I do at number two, and you would think it would be the total opposite
right
at this point. But it's just the Rams trade changed everything and made it just wide open.
Yeah.
We're 8 days from the draft, and I would not put a dime on any player at this point at number two.
Drew Berlovich just asked me at Druzy5 on Twitter a question that you asked me in the break. Describe how you would feel if the Rams take Wentz and the Browns elect to trade back and pass on Goff. And I said, I would not. I don't even want to think about that. I don't know what I would do. I don't know.
I mean, you're going to get a great player, but that.
If I don't know what I would be very
well. It's for you personally. I mean, for all we know, if you know, none of us.
I'd be like, that Goff guy sucked.
You don't want to rewind.
I never wanted.
I really never wanted him anyway.
Yeah, I never wanted.
It's
smoke screen.
I've been paid by the ha. Gotcha.
Gotcha. Ha ha. You got.
Then you'd have to go to tattoo removal. Advanced skin.
Let me just tell you something.
And get
right
the
now.
Golf tattoo removed.
Anybody who listens to the show that actually likes me, okay, if that scenario happens,
how many
send the paramedics to wherever this Browns draft party is because I'm going to need them.
You're going to be live on air.
No, I won't be.
Yes.
No, I will not
I
be
will
near
try
a
to make it happen.
No, there will be no Zagura cam. Zagura cam can get very dangerous.
You should sell that. That's a sellable. Like what? A little GoPro.
I'm not going to have any reaction no matter what we do.
Selfie stick.
If we pick Goff, I'll give a fist
pump. Goff.
If we pick Goff, I'm going to give a fist pump akin to what I did for Travis Benjamin on the sideline in St. Louis.
That was a big one.
That was a big one. But understated for the moment, the magnitude of the moment, getting Jared Goff. Oh, boy. We need this draft to happen already. Or just come out and say it. And I know they're not going to. I'd just like them to know. I'd like to know. Because you come in here, everybody I'm talking to, everybody I'm texting, all the sources around the league, and everybody, Goff, 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 Goff. And then you give me a hope. You give me a glimmer. I almost wish you didn't give me a glimmer, because now I'm latching on to that. I'm talking myself to, oh, it's Jeff Fisher, a defensive coach. He's going to want this big physical quarterback can run a little bit.
It's Goff.
And he's going to, you know, play action, throw the ball. Oh, what a big, strong arm. And he'll play action. He'll throw it down the field to Kenny Britt, Tavon Austin. They want that. They don't want a guy who's going to play a 40 passes a game quarterback like Jared Goff.
But think about it like this. The back shoulder throw to Kenny Britt and that crossing route to Tavon Austin.
Stop!
But what was it?
Makes too much sense.
What year was it when the Texans had the first pick and they, for a long time, was assumed that they were going in the direction of Reggie Bush? And only a couple days before the draft did they pull the okey-oke and announce it was going Mario Williams.
Yes.
So there's plenty of time for stuff to change here. And I think that's
yes.
I think that things are going to change, because I feel like it's not going to be this clear right now as it is leading up to the draft.
I agree.
When are we going to have clarity, Gribbs? Will you text me when you have clarity? You've been texting me with the sirens, and I really like it. I get excited when I get texts from you that have the sirens and the alerts. Find more good information. Find more gives us a chance.
I'll start digging.
Talk to your contacts. Put some bad rumors out there. I had a guy on my Twitter yesterday. He did so much. We had a lot of people tweeting us today. But there was a guy that was all out on the propaganda yesterday on my timeline, and even into this morning, just all out, flat out propaganda about anti-Goff tweets that he's
I've heard they measured Goff's hands again, and they're below 9 inches.
He's trying to get like national media to pick him up, which I think is really, really funny. Steve Tricasso at Trinor. Someone told me Goff draws pictures on the bathroom stalls, and he tweets the Rams with all of these. I mean, every single one of them. Media reporting Goff was a fan of Deflategate. Heard Goff votes for Nader every year. Rumor has it Goff is actually a Kardashian, and then he uses the hashtag LA wants Wentz. Goff to Cleveland. So he did about 100 of these tweets, and it was fantastic. So, Steve, I appreciate what you're doing. Even the Victor Price, I don't know if you guys have heard him give me garbage about liking Goff. He's finally turned the corner, and he said this Tony Franklin interview now. He's just totally depressed. He's like, I finally got him convinced that Goff was the right guy, and now the Rams have messed it up.
This has truly been an impassioned 3 or 4 month campaign from you. I've respected it, and you've held strong, even despite the latest developments.
I'm steadfast. Yeah, when I get a guy, if you're one of my guys, you're one of my guys, Sir Andrew. I'm not backing off on you. My scouting report on you is not changing just because some media people want to hype up Patrick as the next big thing. You're the guy. You're the blue chipper. You know what I mean? Come on.
Loyalty. That's what you got.
That's right. That's all we've got in this world, Gribbs. Gribbs, what do people have coming up this week? Because there's a lot of stuff, I'm sure, with the interviews today. We've got Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown coming up later this week. Andrew Berry going to make his media debut.
Yeah, today was a full day. I mean, a lot of defensive players plus Cameron Irving talking about kind of the theme was maybe fresh starts for all these guys. And I think that we'll have that covered. We already have the story up on Danny Shelton, why he changed his number. Cameron Irving kind of admitting and confirming that he's going to be at center when practice starts later today. It's just an exciting time, and it's why, to me, the draft has come on a little faster than last year, because we've seen these guys in the building for like 2.5 weeks,
yeah.
Whereas last year they were coming in right around this week. So it feels like the offseason's moving at a faster pace. We're just going to have that long lull from like June 10th to July 30th or so.
That'll be an okay lull.
That's going to feel like a marathon.
Yes. Yes. Parting will be such sweet sorrow at that point, Gribbs. Oh, yeah. But then we'll be back, and it'll be training camp, and then it'll be the season, and then it'll be the Road Warriors, 5 of 7 on the road. Let's go. Giddy up. And we'll see who is on that team at that point after this draft. Sir Andrew Gribble, follow him on Twitter at Andrew_Gribble. Has there been any thought, because I've gotten some tweets about this, and really, no, I haven't, but I hope I will after this, to changing it to Sir Andrew at S-E-R Andrew.
I don't need that sounds like extra characters to me.
No, I'm saying get rid of the underscore and the Gribble. Like, you just are like, people will know. Sir Andrew, they're like, oh yeah, that's Andrew Gribble.
I can't give up the last name, because that's what I've been called my entire life. No one ever called me by my first name.
Oh, you've always been called Gribble?
Always. Never. Okay. Yeah, so it's just, it's.
Remember, before there was Sir Anju, it was the Gribbs.
The Gribbs. Yeah. Sir A. Gribble. I think that's a.
Twitter handle is locked in.
It's locked in. Sorry, locked folks. In. Sorry about that. All right. We'll come back, wrap up this show here on this Tuesday. Zagura Wilhelm, Sir Andrew, a.k.a. Gribble. Do you think Gribble the Mad Scribble? I don't know about that one. We'll have to work on that going forward.
Sunday?
Yeah, on Sundays. Yeah, we'll have to work on that. But nonetheless, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Bibtacular walking around. Always good to see Mr. EJ Bibbs. Not related to Gibbs or Gribbs, but a fine man all his own. Dino, it's been fun today. Dino, what stood out to you? We covered a lot of ground today.
I tell you what, I'm very impressed with the Tony Franklin interview.
Is Hooley going to be in on Goff now after that?
He might be. You know, I'm going to play a few cuts during Dynamite drop-ins today. He might swing over to that side.
Where's he at right now? Where's the Hools at right now?
I think he's actually still not sold on the quarterbacks.
So is he trade down?
He's on either Jalen Ramsey or trade down.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe Franklin will bring him over to the Goff side.
You never know. We'll play some drop-ins later on today, and I'll see.
Right. We can only do what we can do when we can do it. All right. That'll do it for us here today. Tomorrow, we'll talk with DeMario Davis. We'll play some of the sound from Danny Shelton, Cam Irving, Barkevious Mingo, Paul Kruger as well. So big show on Hump Day tomorrow here on CBD. For the great Dave DiNatale and Matt Wilhelm, we have to thank big thanks to Peter Schrager from Fox Sports and Tony Franklin, Jared Goff's offensive coordinator at Cal, who absolutely loves that young man. He's like, get in line, Zagura.
He does.
Get in line. Okay, fine, I will. That'll do it for us. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys here on ESPN 850. Thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.